Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live this afternoon downtown at The Pint, 109th and Jasper. We invite you by. Also, you can email us at nationradio@theteam1260.com. Hi there, it's Alan Mitchell. We are going to focus on Oilers past, present, and future today, plus the NHL's biggest stories every week. Guests today include Terry Jones, legendary reporter from the Edmonton Sun, and a man who perhaps more than anyone else has documented the Edmonton Oilers credibly during their time in the NHL. Also, James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail will update us on Eastern Conference teams, and we'll get his input on, basically the Oilers so far this year and looking into the summer. Bob Ridley, legendary play-by-play man who has been calling Medicine Hat Tiger games since 1970, I believe. And Bob knows, he knew Stan Weir as a kid. He knows everything about Medicine Hat and the Tigers. That's going to be a fun interview. Gene Principe will join us in hour two from Rogers Sportsnet. He'll talk about the Oilers and their plans for the summer. Jim Byers back again this week from the Oklahoma City Barons. Make his weekly visit to update us on the playoffs. I think they're one win away, but we'll check with Jim and get an update. And finally, later on, Jason McKee, coach of the newly crowned Spruce Grove Saints, champions of the AJHL. Congratulations to them, and they're on their way to the championship game against BC. It'd be the BCJHL winner as well. So we'll talk about that and more. It's been a busy week. Last night, the final home game for the Oilers. Tomorrow, they play on the road and wrap up the schedule. It is another last-place season, and it's done, basically. The Oilers have a lot of young guns for the future, but it's also true that the draft gives those players to losing teams, and sometimes those teams keep right on losing. Hello, New York Islanders. Hello, Columbus. In order for the Oilers to make these dark seasons matter, winning has to happen soon. And I noticed and was heartened by a quote from Andrew Cogliano this week, and he said, and I quote here, "At some point you have to start winning. You just can't keep getting high draft picks and losing. You have to start building and start winning and start putting a winning team together." So that's going to be the theme for us over the next few weeks, about how the Edmonton Oilers are going to do that, how long it's going to take them, how patient fans have to be. Those questions and more will be answered today and in the future on Nation Radio. A few tweets to get to before we get to Terry Jones. Have us some emails here. Shane says, who is eligible to play for Oklahoma City in the postseason? We do have, it's called a clear day roster for Oklahoma City, and it goes like this. Jeff Delorier and Martin Gerber are the eligible goaltenders. On defense, Brian Helmer, Kevin Montgomery, Richard Petiot. From the Oilers, currently Jeff Petrie can be sent back. Alex Plant, Jake Taylor, and Colton Tubert. The forwards are Mark Arcobello, recently signed by the Oilers. Alex Giroux. From the Oilers, Timo Hartikainen, Linus Omark, Ryan O'Mara, and Chris Van de Velde are all eligible. Milan Kitnar, Andrew Lord, Colin McDonald, Brad Moran, Ben Andres, Greg Stewart, and Zach Stortini also on that list. Defenseman Anthony Aiello and forwards Philip Cornett and Matt Marquardt are still available to practice. They can only play when an injury, recall, or a suspension occurs. So that's the update for you on Oklahoma City. As I mentioned, we'll have Jim Byers on later on in the show and talk about the playoffs. They play both tonight and tomorrow, the Oklahoma City Barons. Joining us now on the line is Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun. Terry, how are you?
I'm terrific. Yourself?
You've been very busy. You know, you're adjusting well to this new media. You tweet all the time. You're a star there. You have Jones at Large video items up over at the Sun all the time. Who said you can't teach an old dog new tricks?
Oof. Yeah, it's the tweet thing has surprised me. I'll have to. I was like, what is this idiotic pursuit when I took it on as a. I did it during the World Junior in Saskatoon briefly, and or throughout that competition, the Olympics in Vancouver. But I, resigned immediately after both events. But they asked me to do it during the Grey Cup, and with a whole different philosophy than the one they threw at me the first time, which was like to say who scored or whatever. I kind of took the approach that okay, I'm going to do this like I'm sitting. Talking to the guy in the press box beside me, or maybe better said, on the bar stool beside me. And I'm having fun with it. And that's just shocked the heck out of me.
Well, you're very topical and you have an opinion. And I think that's why you're so popular and you're killing the local media as far as followers. So good for you. You wrote an excellent article on, I believe it was Thursday, with regard to the arena and Daryl Cates and the ownership and the negotiations. I thought it was critical of both sides, but it was well done. What's the reaction been since Thursday to that article?
Well, the thing that has got me consistently throughout this entire conversation and debate is, and it's, you know, it's the way the world is, but is just how much of the negative anti-Cates, anti-giving billionaire millions, sort of, you know, that sort of thing. But the silent majority is a massive majority in this thing. And I think it's hit everybody this week, and I touched on it in the column to some extent, but I think it's far bigger of an impact than I went into, is that this week, $340 million got approved for a museum. And it'll be very near to the, you know, proposed arena site and to the $88 million Alberta Art Gallery. And there's also the matter of, you know, that $112 million for improvements to Commonwealth Stadium, plus another 12 to come to put in the new seats. All of this stuff has gone through, no problem whatsoever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's this arena thing, which we need far worse than anything else there, especially from the component of doing our downtown. And I don't think the problem here is if you could take all of Edmonton and take them to all the rinks around the league, they'd get it without a second of doubt that this is indeed the second oldest rink in the league and way off what is now the standard. They'd also get it if you took them to some downtowns where, you know, you've got that blight downtown. Which we have been headed in that direction for a long time. If people aren't living there and there isn't, you know, a real focus in life and walking the streets aspect to it, both day and night, you got a problem. I agree with the mayor. This is far more about that than it is about the arena. But it's also just that whole concept that that Edmonton wants to. The average guy in Edmonton, I don't think, has a problem with the whole concept, just because the you have a chance to have a city to be proud of downtown and a place to go and enjoy yourself in winter and summer, and a building that will be, you know, hopefully the right up there with the top of the best buildings in the league. And that's the part, the reaction to that part is the part that surprised me more than the the tough stand that I continue to take with Daryl.
I think one of the things that I've noticed, and I continue to be frustrated by, is that it's framed often when I talk to people as a black and white issue, basically a matter of a bully owner versus an inept and short-sighted council. It's a long way from that, right? It's more complicated than that.
I'm sorry?
It's more complicated than that.
No, way more complicated, but it is that. You know, it's hard to get past that is the problem, but getting past that is where the real story is and where the real, I can just imagine this city 4 years, in 2014, when, and I say when, not if, this building is built, the excitement and the pride and what it does for so many things, including just, you know, the mindset of a city that likes itself, the economy is generally better. It's just like when you have winning teams. I think you can find a lot of connections to good things that happen because of that have absolutely nothing to do with that. It's just the way people think. It's all part of that thing. And Edmonton's lost a lot of that in the last few years.
Last question on this, and then we're going to move on to another subject, but I wanted your input in as it's being discussed now. Is this going to be, as you just described, a nice, high-end, international quality, top-drawer arena, or are we going on the cheap a little bit based on what's been proposed?
Well, you can do it right for $450 million, as long as, you know, it's a well-spent $450 million. There are some rinks in this league that I think kind of cut some corners, and St. Louis would be one of them. Boston would be another. New rinks I'm talking about. So there is that concern. I'm always concerned that they're going to forget the press box in a place, because it's amazing how many architects have managed to do that over the years. But $450 million well spent, and especially if the owner is inspired, you know, after the original rink is put into place, to do some things that I suspect might get done here, like creating a Hall of Fame to put in the place, those sort of things. You know, there's a lot of upside there, and there's a ton of money to be made in that building.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll talk about that as time goes on. But I wanted to change subjects a little bit. You wrote another article recently about Paul Lauria and his retirement from Anthem singing. I was a little worried maybe that story would get a little lost in the Rod Phillips goodbye. But I thought it was a terrific night last night. What was your feedback on that?
Yeah, I was. I thought the best part of it, you know, Paul is he did it in a column I wrote the day before today, talking about how, you know, he was definitely going to hold the mic to the crowd and that sort of thing. And I thought the best part of it was, you know, there's a whole bunch of young players on this hockey team that really, really got a feel of, you know, it was only a minute long or whatever, but what it can be like around here, you know, with the playoff thing, because they were, you know, they were 14, 15 years old, and, you know, Taylor Hall, I talked to last night, he happened to watch that game and on television as a kid, and it gives you an idea of what this city is like, or can be like, or has been like, and I think that's really important right now. But it was also just a wonderful payoff for 30 years. You know, I talking here and there with people as you go around town, so, well, he's just an anthem singer, right? Well, there are a lot of people around sport who are just an anthem singer, but Paul Lauria, in this situation in Edmonton, was more than an anthem singer, and he got paid off for that last night, and I think that's terrific.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really well handled as well. Terry, have you watched the Oil Change series?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I missed one episode, but it's somewhere out there online. I intend to catch up to it. The last one, I haven't seen it.
My question is, when Steve Tambellini took over as general manager, and I know it's impossible and we really shouldn't read too much into an episode of a TV show, I really felt that he would be the general manager de facto and that Kevin Lowe would be someone that he checked things with. How do you think that relationship works? Is Tambellini the GM with Lowe signing off on the big items, or has much changed since maybe 2007 in terms of how the management works?
I think that if you wanted to put a percentage on it, that Tambellini is effectively 80% the general manager. He definitely does all the day-to-day general manager things, and he has a boss, and I don't have a problem with that. A lot of people have a problem with Kevin Lowe and the hockey team getting into this situation. A lot of people forget that he has a boss, and that boss wanted is Darryl Cates, who wanted to come in and spend to the cap and buy a team right off the go. And Kevin also has, I guess you'd call it, an anger management problem, and that showed itself in a couple of deals, Ryan Smith being the most notable. But also, people have already managed to forget 2006 and what he did putting that team together that got to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, which was one hell of a job of general managing.
Right.
Put it all together, and with somebody like Tambellini in place that I think has done a pretty good job, other than on the trade deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
But you take that anger management problem of Lowe out of the way, and the situation of blowing this team up has taken the owner out of the way, and I think it just might work with the combination it's in right now, and it's I mean, the difference between this year and last year and the last night last year and the last night at home is phenomenal. I mean, a team that finished 30th for the second year in a row getting a standing ovation at the end of a loss in the last game after giving that crowd 13 wins all season at home is just remarkable. And it shows that the people have really bought into this rebuild, and you have to understand that most people in Canada in hockey said you can't do that in Canada. You can do it somewhere else, but you cannot do it in Canada. Well, they're doing it.
Yep, and I agree with you totally. I think a lot of people miss the point that Darryl Cates was the one who mentioned rebuild first, apparently, and that was only maybe a year ago that they said, okay, maybe we tear this thing down and start
well,
all over.
I'm going to interrupt you right there because what the idea that anybody, any of those three guys, the owner, the general manager, the hockey president, sat down and decided, you know, this is what we're going to do is totally fictitious. Mm-hmm. What happened was is they had no blooming choice. I mean, blow it up, it blew itself up to pursue it and continue this and decide not to continued the pre-agent thing and everything. That's the decision that was made. But the blowing it up part was, it imploded.
With that in mind, what's a reasonable timeline? Obviously, the draft is the big part of this year. Possibly a free agent signing of a mid-level defenseman to replace Jim Vandermeer, or maybe Vandermeer comes back. What's a reasonable timeline, in your opinion, for the Oilers to be in contention for a playoffs? Is that 2 years away?
I'll go with the quote that Tom Rennie said at the start of before he coached his first game. He told me that we will compete in by our third year, and by competing he meant with the top clubs in the league, and we will win the Stanley Cup by the fifth year.
Okay,
that's what he said. I said, what about the first 2 years? Said we will compete. I can't really see this team making the big jump to a playoff position next year. But and we all lose sight of the injuries here in both of these last 2 years. I'm not sure they were a legitimate 30th place team on paper both of those years. But there's a lot of growing to be done here, and there's a lot more changes to be done. And I suspect that there's a good chance that whoever they pick first this year may not start the season with this team.
Right.
Depending whether they pick first or second, and if it's first and they pick Larson, whether he decides to spend another year in Sweden hasn't been mentioned much, but that tends to be the case with a lot of Swedes.
Do you really, I saw your item online, and it looked like you were pretty certain Larson is one and Nugent Hopkins is two. How close do you think that is right now, and is there a possibility that Nugent Hopkins takes over by draft day?
Well, I think if you went, I must point out that I don't have the inside of the cranium of Stu McGregor on this thing, but, I mean, you do it by talking to other scouts they're just hockey's an interesting world in terms of that buzz that goes around and the knowledge that people get from so many sources. It seems to be pretty accurate in most cases, but I suspect that 3 weeks to a month ago, it was Larson, followed by Landeskog, followed by Nugent Hopkins, and with the Couturier out of Quebec in fourth. I suspect that after the first round of the playoffs that it was Larson with Nugent Hopkins moving up to second, Landeskog slipping down to third, and I really got to have the feeling that from everything I've heard that the Couturier is dropping like a rock.
Okay.
But I think that everybody was looking at this situation with that if Nugent Hopkins continues this in the playoffs, that there was a possibility that he could move up. Larson is, I think they go again tonight, but it's 1-1 in the final.
Yeah.
His team got to the final, and remember, he's the the youngest guy in the team.
Yeah, and he's playing big minutes, too. So.
Yeah, and he's also a plus player and all that sort of stuff, right? Yeah.
So three quick ones to end this. Who would you pick if you had a choice for the Oilers Rookie of the Year? And I know that's a loaded question. Two really good candidates and three or four that are really good. So who would you pick, though?
Well, I'd pick Taylor Hall if you're just talking about, if you ignore the number of games played and all that sort of thing. I think he's the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to go into... the total number of games played and all that sort of thing, I guess I'd have to go with Jordan Eberle.
Right. And then, really quickly, who wins the Masters this weekend?
I'm going to really cop out on this, but I'll just say it's going to be a European.
Okay. I think that Rory kid is going to win it, but I'm not...
I'm actually looking forward to watching some of it because I haven't seen one swing of a golf club yet.
No, you wouldn't around here. And finally, I have to ask you this, and this is very obscure, and I apologize if it puts you on the spot, but years and years ago when you were working with Whitey on CFRN, do you remember the trivia question about Cy Young? And
we laughed for about 40 minutes on that thing. We got going, and we neither of us could stop laughing.
I remember.
Had more fun doing that show than just about anything I've done in this business. Whitey was so great to work with.
Yeah, it was a great show.
And that studio, which I suspect you may be sitting in right now, was a great place to work. And the guys around there and the operators and, it was just a really good atmosphere around that place. I really enjoyed it. Had a ton of fun. Only problem was nobody listened to it.
To this day, when I hear Ginger Beaumont, and I don't often, I think of you. So...
before since.
Hey, Terry, thanks so much. We really appreciate your time.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. That's Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun, a great columnist for a long, long time, and a guy who doesn't back away from the tough questions, as you heard there. And we really appreciate having him on, talking about the arena, about the Oilers, about the management and how it works, and a little bit of insight into the team as well, and talked a little about Paul Laurio as well, and that was a great event last night. 12:21 coming up, James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail.